Helmet sported twisted horns. A gaping dragon's maw adorned the front, fashioned of blood-red lacquer and polished steel. The breastplate of his doe was molded from rectangular plates of hardened leather and iron. It bore a hexagonal crest, with two arrow feathers affixed like dashes in its center, opposite each other, ever watching the other's back, ever promising a balance between light and dark. Silently, the men and their beasts crept through the rapidly fading darkness. An early morning fog encircled the horses' hooves, unraveling with each step as they cut through Jukai Forest, ever forward, ever onward. The samurai leading the contingent rode through the ghostly wood, his eyes scrutinizing the ground before him, missing nothing. After a time, they came upon a clearing. The same clearing they had sought for the past 2 days. Recently arrived vultures circled above in slow downward spirals, drawing the men closer, drawing them toward a scene of death and devastation. Before the band of samurai lay the remnants of a wealthy convoy recently plundered. The men reined in their horses, their leader dismounted without a word. He was so light of foot, his steps could barely be heard. The white fog swirled around him as he moved forward, soundlessly. Though he could have paused to take note of the men lost, the bodies of the 15 samurai left to rot in an ignominious pre-dawn, the leader instead moved with unfailing purpose toward a heap of wood that looked to be the remains of a recent bonfire. As he neared the charred traces, the shadow of an elegant, lacquered norimono formed before his gaze. The samurai adjusted the swords at his belt and removed his helmet. A rosy light began to crest through the trees at his back. Unbidden, he turned to face its blushing warmth. He took in a careful breath, a breath mindful of the life he was still privileged to live, a breath mindful of the good death he was destined to have on the field of battle. He was young. His face was lean, hawkish, with a pointed jaw and eyes blacker than pitch. His topknot was perfect, every strand aligned in elegant submission. As he inspected the ruins, another armored samurai moved to his side, carrying a fistful of burned boro and silk. Two singed banners, one bearing the same hexagonal crest, and another bearing the crest of the emperor. The second samurai passed along his confirmation.
"I am sorry, Kenshin Wakasama."
Though his words were apologetic, he did not speak with remorse. He spoke with an understood promise, one of bloody retribution. Instead of meeting the samurai's promise with one of his own, the young man with the dragon helmet did not even glance his way. Expressionless in the face of the horrors perpetrated on his own men, on his own family, he gripped a blackened piece of wood and yanked it aside with vicious precision. It splintered, its ends crumpling to dust in his grasp. The young samurai peered inside. The scorched body of a girl lay within. What remained of her skin was crackled black by the fire. When he studied the carnage further, Hattori Kenshin noticed the glint of several arrowheads buried beneath the girl's remains, a suspicious stain darkening the norimono's floor. Tari. Thick. Blood. She had not died by fire. He paused, then continued in his search, his eyes unceasingly roving. Wedged into one of the only remaining corners of the richly appointed norimono was a small triangle of burned fabric, the same sort of boro fabric his family used to fashion their pennants, the same boro the peasants and maidservants wore. He looked harder, scouring the embers for further glimpses of truth. Mariko's kimono. Not even a hint of the distinct Tatsumura silk could be seen anywhere. Kenshin's eyes moved to the bare earth at his feet, drifted to the left, then slowly to the right. Azuri sandal, all but hidden from his eyes, lay on its side a few steps away from the norimono. It shone, even in the dim reaches of the early morning sun. A lacquered finish, unmarred by flames. Kenshin stepped toward his sister's shoe, kneeling to retrieve it.
"My lord,"
the samurai at his back began in a hesitant tone.
"I know..."
Kenshin silenced him with a glance, then returned to his work, his eyes still searching, ever hunting. Soon, he found what he was looking for. Tracks. Two sets. One made in pursuit of the other, the second set of far less interest to Kenshin than the first. The first set were the tracks of a woman's split-toed tabi socks. Tracks like those of a wounded deer staggering away from its inevitable demise. It was clear an attempt had been made to cover them. But few who traversed these woods possessed the dogged determination and unfailing skill of Hattori Kenshin. He knew these tracks. The shapes pressed into the earth were too small to be those of a man, too delicate. Though his twin sister was anything but delicate, Kenshin knew they belonged to her with the same sort of certainty he felt in his heart. In his every breath. She'd been alive 3 days ago, and these tracks led to the left, away from the massacre. Without a word, Hattori Kenshin returned to his wild-eyed warhorse. Born to the motions of a warrior, to the movements of a hunt, he replaced his dragon helmet and chin guard, then swung onto his oiled saddle.
"My lord," the samurai protested again. "Though it may be difficult to accept, I am afraid it is clear. Lady Hattori..."
Kenshin raised his left hand, curled his fingers into a fist, then he signaled his men onward, following the tracks into the forest. From his perch at the head of the convoy, the Dragon of Kai grinned slowly, darkly. His sister was not dead. No, she was much too smart for that. The Golden Castle. His Imperial Majesty, Minamoto Masaru, direct descendant of the Sun Goddess, heavenly sovereign of the Empire of Wa, was lost. In his own gardens, no less. But there was no need for him to worry. It was not the kind of lost to cause alarm. Today, he'd intentionally wandered too far. Wandered away from those who hovered around him like flies to a carcass. He often became intentionally lost on afternoons such as this. The season was beginning its slow shift from spring to summer. Everything around him was in bloom, the air stirred by a soft breeze. An ochre sunset gilded the waters of the pond to his left. Its gently lapping shore rippled like molten amber. Fallen cherry blossoms littered its surface, pale pink petals strewn across slate-gray waters. The flowers were beginning to die, to fall under the weight of the sun. It was his favorite time of year. Warm enough to wander the royal gardens of Heian Castle without feeling the threat of a chill, yet cool enough to forego the nuisance of an oiled paper umbrella. Perhaps he would venture to the moon-viewing pavilion tonight. The sky had been unusually clear today. The stars, too, should be unusually bright. He took his time across the squared stepping stones encircling a miniature pagoda. Its tiered eaves were sprinkled with birdseed. A heron strutted near the shore, blasting a warning to the black swan gliding by. "Keep clear of my domain." The emperor smiled to himself. Was he the heron, or was he the swan? His smile fell as quickly as it rose. A familiar warble cut through the silence at his right shoulder. A swallow soared toward him, landing on a corner of the miniature pagoda, its wings an unearthly shade of iridescent blue. The diminutive bird puffed out its stomach and shook out its feathers, tilting its head to one side, waiting for the emperor. The emperor took two steps toward the swallow, leaned in close, his left ear angled near the swallow's bright orange beak. The small bird tilted closer, unafraid. Unnatural. Its familiar warble faded to a hushed whisper, a melodic sigh. The emperor nodded. The swallow preened. Once more, the bird took flight on a wisp of wind, vanishing into the clouds above. Without even a moment's pause, Minamoto Masaru turned from the shore back in the direction of his castle. After wending down a few misguided paths, he finally saw the topmost gable of the imperial palace rising above the trees. In honeyed moments like these, the emperor understood why Heian Castle was often called the Golden Castle. A sea of gilded roof tiles spilled from tier to tier, catching the light in slowly descending waves. Along each hipped eave were carved figurines of cranes, fish, and tigers. Cherry trees lined the eastern foot trails. Orange trees bordered the west. The covered walkways leading from building to building were constructed of citrus-scented cypress wood, their paths formed of neatly raked white gravel. He stopped to watch his castle become awash in the colors of a setting sun. If he didn't take time to enjoy such sights, they would soon be lost to him, like tears in rain. The emperor proceeded to walk by a granite monument resting on a hillock to his right. His eye caught on the flapping pennants adorning its four corners. A trio of gentian flowers above a spray of bamboo leaves, the Minamoto clan's royal crest. His frown deepened as he continued onward. In a few months it would be time for the festival of Obon, the time each year when all the empire's citizens returned to their ancestral homes to honor their deceased. Soon the emperor would be making the journey to Yedo for this very reason, to clear his ancestors' graves of weeds and pay homage to them with food and drink. But would his forefathers feel pride at his return, or would they feel disdain? The emperor could not answer these questions. Not yet. For he had not yet accomplished all he meant to accomplish. All his greatest aspirations had yet to be realized. Yes, it was true he'd maintained power over the Empire of Wa for the entirety of his reign, but it was a muddled sort of power, much like a loosely tied ribbon, its ends trailing the ground. He had not achieved half of what his father had achieved before passing on the crown. He had not made the Empire of Wa bigger or stronger. He had not managed to build a greater legacy for his sons. Indeed, it could even be suggested that he'd left his empire in worse condition, one far weaker than before, one that would rely on the strengths of both his sons, Roku's intellect and Raiden's fist. Strange that all this had come to pass. Come to pass despite the emperor having sacrificed so much to give his sons more. He'd gone as far as to execute many of his childhood friends to keep them from challenging his reign. The emperor halted again in his stroll, as though the wind had been cracked from his chest. He took a slow breath, a pinching one. Heated tongs clenched tight around his heart. He still felt it, even after all this time. The weight of his friends' deaths would always be a heavy burden, a constant reminder. But he could not afford to feel remorse for his past decisions. They had not been made lightly. The Emperor of Wa could not be openly challenged by any man, not if he ever meant to achieve his greatest desires. And his friends would undoubtedly have challenged him. Naganori would never have remained quiet in the face of the Emperor's most recent edicts, his most recent attempts to consolidate his holdings, to raise taxes on his lands, to collect his due. All before striking out on his grandest of conquests, waging war for domination over the sea and all its spoils. Yes, Naganori would always have been a problem. An Asano man, through and through, married to the law and its pervasive sense of justice. But perhaps Asano Naganori could have been controlled in time, were it not for the others, less willing to bend. Takeda Shingen. A cloud of yellow butterflies wafted across the white gravel before him. They took flight on a twist of air, curling and unfurling into themselves like a beating heart. No, the Emperor's childhood friends would have been far too problematic. Better he keep his council small. Better he keep it amongst his family, and no one else. He pushed through the cloud of butterflies, leaving them to scatter in disarray. Alas, the deaths of his friends had not succeeded in putting an end to the whispers at his feet. The murmurs of those who would prefer to see a man with military skill at the helm of the Empire. Especially of late, the Emperor had witnessed the pomp and grandeur of the royal court being cast in a weak light. The weak light of undue opulence, of unnecessary excess. Awareness flared in his throat, pulsed in his ears. The grandeur of the court was the grandeur he knew well. It was the grandeur of his son, the Crown Prince of Wa, Minamoto Roku. Second born, but first in line to rule. It was not the grandeur of his other son, Raiden, first born, yet destined to rule nothing. Indeed, destiny was a fickle beast. There you are, my sovereign. Warmth riffled through the Emperor at the sound of this voice, a stirring that began in his bones and thrummed to his fingertips. The comfort of a loved one, of an embrace he need never question. But he did not turn at its sound. The husky female voice continued, "I thought I would find you here." He did not face her. The Emperor did not need to look to see her face. Its image lingered ever in the forefront of his mind. It was the face of the woman he had loved all his life, the mother of his elder son, Raiden. Not his empress, not his wife, but the woman of his heart. She was here, with him. Though he'd failed to make her his empress, she'd stayed by his side as his royal consort, stayed by his side and never questioned anything.
"You know me well, Kanako," he said without looking her way.
Yes, her laughter was the music of a softly strummed shamisen. "I do." Finally he turned toward her. Time had not weathered her features as they had his. Her figure was willowy, her skin like smooth ivory. She was still beautiful. He would always find her beautiful. From the moment he'd watched her conjure animals from the stuff of shadows, he'd found her to be the most beautiful woman he'd ever beheld. They'd been young then, not much older than children. He'd loved her still. And she'd loved him still, even when his father had forced him to marry a different young woman, one from a wealthy family with a million koku domain. The Emperor did not reach for Kanako, though he wanted to. It was impossible to know who watched them, even now, which servants reported to which master or mistress. And it would not do for anyone to witness the Emperor in a moment of weakness, no matter how insignificant. Blossoms from a nearby cherry tree slanted their way. Kanako wove her slender fingers through the shower of petals, catching several in a grasp of magic. A swirl of sorcery. Almost absent-mindedly, she conjured the petals into slowly churning eddies. Shapes. First a dragon, then a lion. Then a snake. Transfixed, the Emperor watched the snake consume the lion. Kanako smiled, her lips curving into a gentle crescent. "Did my little swallow deliver its tidings?" she asked softly, letting the snake roll between her fingers. The Emperor nodded, waited to hear more of what he craved.
"The daughter of Hattori Kano is nowhere to be found," she continued. "She was due here 2 nights past. Many are saying her convoy was ambushed near Jukai Forest."
A pause.
"By the Black Clan."
He waited further. Kanako let the petals drift away. "It is not clear if the girl lives." Though a tick rose in his jaw, the Emperor nodded carefully. Then he resumed his stroll toward his castle.
"You have told our son?"
he asked under his breath. "Not yet." Kanako glanced sideways at him, her dove-gray kimono silks parting like waves at her feet.
Not until we decide what must be said, what must be done.
They rounded a bend in the white gravel walkway. The Empress's pavilion bloomed into sight. The Emperor could hear the tittering of female voices, the undoubted condescension passing through the ranks of his wife's countless attendants.
The Emperor is walking through the gardens with his witch whore again.
He refrained from sneering, from showing any reaction at all. Those foolish women knew nothing but this. They were the reason his reign had been tarnished by the stain of weakness, of excess. These insipid young nobles and their families, forever grasping for favor. The Emperor had to transcend this stain. He had to have a tribute worthy of his lineage. He knew now, more than ever, how much he needed the might of both his sons to achieve this, no matter how improbable that may seem, no matter how unlikely his wife would be to acquiesce.
Her beautiful, obedient Roku would never be allowed to work alongside the son of the witch whore.
When a burst of nearby female laughter caught his attention, the Emperor's eyes flitted to a covered walkway across the courtyard. The Empress's billowing pink kimono pooled against the white stone as she bowed low, then spun away before he could catch her gaze,
before he could see the hurt in her eyes.
Unmoved, the Emperor watched his wife float away, her back rigid and her tittering minions trailing in her shadow.
"What of my wife?" he asked Kanako in a low voice.
A hesitation.
"She knows."
The edge in her voice could cut through steel. The Emperor straightened his spine,
hardened his will. "And so it begins."
A calculated risk. Foolhardy. It was not a word people often attributed to Hattori Mariko. Curious had been the word most often ascribed to her when she was younger. She'd been the watchful sort of child, the one conscious of every mistake. When Mariko had erred, it had usually been intentional, an attempt to push barriers or a desire to learn. Usually it was that, a wish to know more. As she grew from a curious child into an even more curious young woman, the word she most often overheard at her back was odd. Much too odd. Far too prone to asking questions, far too apt to linger in places she wasn't meant to be. The sort of odd that would bring her and her family nothing but trouble. She sighed to herself. If her detractors could be present now, they would be pleased to admit how right they'd been, pleased to see her in obvious distress. True, what Mariko planned to do tonight was foolish, but it could not be helped. She'd already lost nearly 5 days, 5 days of precious time, especially as there could be little doubt that Kenshin was now on her trail. Mariko had doubled back on her path several times, even resorted to deliberate misdirection. But her brother would find her soon. And after 5 days of creeping through villages and outposts on the westernmost edge of Jukai Forest, 5 days of making quiet inquiries and having bartered the exquisite jade hairpin her mother had gifted her, Mariko had finally found it late last night. The favored watering hole of the Black Clan. Or so that old crone 2 villages over claims. After achieving this hard-won victory, Mariko had spent all evening hiding behind a nearby tree a stone's throw from where she now sat. Hiding behind that tree and determining how she could best use this newfound information, how she could best manipulate it to learn why a band of cutthroat thieves had been sent to murder her on her journey to Inako. When not a single black-clad man had bothered to show his face last night, Mariko had come to terms with a second, harsher truth. The old crone could very well have fleeced her for the priceless hairpin. But Mariko would never know if she didn't try. This was an experiment, and experiments of all sorts intrigued her. They offered a way to glean knowledge, to use it, shape it, mold it, into whatever she needed it to be. And this was a different kind of experiment, a different way to collect information. Though it was an admittedly foolish one, and could also have disastrous results. The watering hole in question was not as grand as Mariko had imagined it would be. Which makes sense. After all, it's not exactly one of the fabled Geiko houses of Hanami. She smiled to herself, amending her initial impression, favoring it for facts. Sequestered near a farm, the watering hole was awash in the scent of refuse and dank river water. Mud seeped from between a series of misshapen flagstones leading to a weathered lean-to. The structure was fashioned from rotted cedar and bamboo grayed to stone by the sun. Several rickety benches and square tables littered a circle of cleared land enclosing the lean-to. A small fire rose from a lopsided brick oven that served as part of the structure's only standing wall. Bamboo torches ringed the clearing, bathing everything in a warm, amber light. In truth, despite its smell, which Mariko would never find acceptable, not even if she lived for an age, it had a certain charm all its own. Hattori Mariko had lived a life disdaining much of the silk and luxury her status had afforded her, and there was a delicious comfort in no longer having to put on airs that had always seemed so foreign to her. She slouched lower on her bench, scratched unabashedly at her shoulder, sat with her feet spread, ordered whatever she wanted without hesitation, and met every man's gaze full on when addressed. Mariko had been waiting for the past 4 hours. Upon her arrival, she'd ordered one small earthenware bottle of sake and had nursed sips of the lukewarm rice wine from a chipped cup, watching as the sun took refuge beyond the horizon. Now it was dark. Now the day had given way for the creatures of the night to come slithering from their holes. Alas, the particular creatures Mariko sought were not of the punctual sort. Her knee began to jounce beneath the low slab of crooked wood. It was a crude table, perched atop 4 unevenly sliced tree trunks. If she leaned too hard on one end, the entire structure wobbled like her old nursemaid walking in the wind. To her left, horses drank from a large canvas tarp suspended between bamboo poles staked in the ground. A watering hole built for both beasts and their drunken burdens. Speaking of which, where are they? The more time passed, the more Mariko's nerves reached a feverish pitch. The copper pieces she'd won off a drunken peasant in a game of Sugoroku 2 nights past would not last her into tomorrow if the Black Clan did not arrive. She might have to trick more money from someone else tonight. But though she was beginning to understand the necessity and value of this skill, Mariko did not possess a true taste for thievery, even if she did display a certain knack for it. Sleight of hand, but faint of honor. The same kind of thief she'd mocked in the forest, before murdering him. The remembrance pulled at her insides, washed her cheeks in unbecoming pallor. Not from remorse, as she still did not feel any, but more from the harshness of such actions. The coldness with which she'd taken a life. It unseated her in these quiet moments of reflection, made her uncomfortable in her own skin. She took another sip of the sake and stifled a grimace. Despite its warming effects, Mariko had never quite developed a taste for the brewed rice wine. She preferred chilled umeshu, with its sweetly sour plum flavor. But a traveling soldier or a wandering peasant would be unlikely to ask for such a thing. Especially not in a watering hole downwind of a smelly farm. Mariko let her eyes wander skyward, and breathed deep. Though she was surrounded by the unknown, that same sense of freedom washed through her, lush and heady. Irrespective of the refuse around her, it could not be denied that this part of Jukai Forest was lovely. Lacy red maples fringed the border of the wood, coming together to frame the watering hole on all sides, like a mother embracing a child. The scent of the maples was rich, earthier than the sharp bite of the pine. Beside the lean-to was a willow, its drooping branches dusting the battered roof in a ceaseless caress. Mariko had always found willows profoundly sad, yet deeply beautiful. Just as she noticed the willow branches begin a new dance, a slow swaying undulation, a sudden burst of motion erupted from behind her. She turned in time to watch the elderly man who had been stoking the lopsided fireplace hobble from its shadow, his hands rubbing at a linen cloth dangling from his waist, removing whatever traces of grime lingered.
"Ranmaru-sama,"
he called, his grin wide and his eyes bright.
"I'd wondered where you'd disappeared to these last few days."
A tall figure dressed solely in black bounded toward the elderly man, pulling him into a warm embrace. When the newcomer's head turned, Mariko caught a brief flash of his features. He was a boy not much older than she. But his clothes were unmistakable, black from his chin to his toes. Even his straw sandals and thin socks had been dyed to match. A tingling awareness flared through her. Mariko was all but certain now. She'd found a member of the Black Clan. A member of the band of men who'd tried to murder her. Fury surged beneath her skin in a heated rush. She gritted her teeth, forcing herself to remain steady. Anger was a reckless emotion, and she needed all her wits about her if she intended to outmatch this boy. More men clad in black moved to join him. They were all unmasked and well-kempt, ambling at the leisurely pace of those without worry. The pace of panthers sated from a recent hunt. Another boy and a girl with no more than 20 years to each of their names rushed behind the elderly man, bearing earthenware jars of sake and many small cups, some of them rather worse for the wear. Curiosity chased after the hot fury still coursing through Mariko's veins. She tried her best to avert her gaze, to convey a sense of general disinterest. It would do her no good for any member of the Black Clan to suspect she'd been waiting for them, to suspect she'd lain in watchful preparation these past 2 nights. One immediate realization granted her reprieve. If they thought it was possible someone was on their trail, the Black Clan surely would not have come tonight. But Mariko had taken special pains not to draw anyone's notice. To their eyes, the circular clearing surrounding their favorite watering hole was being patronized this night by 2 older men playing go, one slovenly young drunk snoring at his own table, and what appeared to be a dirty peasant boy of no more than 14 or 15, distastefully swallowing sips of lukewarm sake. Indeed, there was not a single threat to be seen here. Mariko watched surreptitiously from behind another swig of sake as the men in black took their places at the tables nearest to the lean-to. Her eyes roamed with thoughtful slowness, deliberate languor. "I am a reed in a river, bending and moving with the current. For now." Something brushed past her, startling her from her attempt to remain inconspicuous. It was a final straggler. She did not see his features as he glided past, but did observe several things of note. Unlike many of the other members of the Black Clan, his shoulder-length hair was unbound, unkempt. Forgoing the traditional topknot of a warrior, he also did not carry a sword. At first glance, it appeared he had no weapon anywhere on his person. This straggler did not offer any warm greeting to anyone present. No one came running from the lean-to to offer him an embrace and a bottle of sake. Instead, he promptly stretched out on a bench and turned his hood backward to cover his face. With his hands stacked atop his chest, he remained at a distance, taking in some rest. A man of obvious repute. At the sound of more laughter, Mariko's eyes drifted back toward the first boy, the one the elderly man had called Ranmaru. A part of her wished to move closer, to be within striking distance, but caution commanded that she keep her distance. The boy sat as he stood, straight as an arrow. His jaw was strong and squared, his lips broad. Though he was clean-shaven and smiling, oddly affable for a supposed mercenary, he still gave off the distinct feeling of power. A checked sort of power, like that of a strong undercurrent. One that could drag you beneath its depths in an instant. Ranmaru stood once more, speaking in hushed tones to the elderly man, who nodded and replied just as furtively. Then Ranmaru resumed his place of deference at a rickety low table near the center of the clearing. Even while he continued speaking with the men in black gathered around him, Mariko watched him rearrange his bench, positioning it with care. A care that put to question the unconscious laughter emanating from his lips.
He's moving the bench into a position where he can see anyone or anything attempting to approach him unawares.
He was smart despite his age, exceedingly watchful, a trait Mariko prized in herself. She leaned in, attempting to connect the voices present to those in her memory, attempting to prove her suspicions true. The other black-clad men took their seats, encircling Ranmaru as their earthenware bottles and cups were filled and refilled at steady intervals. From beneath lowered lashes, Mariko also noted that though he continued drinking and joking alongside everyone else, Ranmaru's eyes were in constant motion. Eyes that soon fell on her. Mariko was struck by how neat and clean he appeared. How proper. Not at all like a member of a notorious band of thieves and murderers. Though his attention lingered on her for no more than a breath, the faintest of flushes crept up her neck. Soon this flush touched the edges of her temples, and Mariko realized, not a moment too soon, that her fingers were dangerously clenched around her small cup of sake. Another wash of anger, mixed with that same strange curiosity. Again, she fought back the desire to situate herself in the center of things, for it was far safer to remain alert and apart. If Ranmaru was indeed the leader of the Black Clan, this boy was the one responsible for the attack on Mariko's convoy, for the deaths of Chiyo and Nobutara, and countless other lives lost in a darkened wood only 5 days before. She lifted the sake to her lips and squeezed her eyes shut. Though she knew for certain she did not appear to be a threat, Mariko could not afford for any member of the Black Clan to linger on her for too long. To study her and find an enemy. Or worse, find a prize.
Focus on the task at hand, but never forget.
Now came the difficult part. Now came the time to put her musings to action. Mariko had spent the better part of the last few nights writhing beneath a woolen blanket, plodding through a haze of anger. For these past few days, she'd lived the life of a poor vagabond, and though it had been strangely peaceful to be beholden to no one save herself, she'd still been acutely aware of her purpose. Each night, she'd taken in careful breaths from beneath her blanket, a blanket that had smelled of iron and dirt, and had felt even worse against her skin. One of many items she'd pilfered from the stable of a comfortable farm in a nearby province. A horse blanket in a horse stable. She'd climbed into the loft and fallen asleep amongst stale bales of hay, the only time Mariko had paused in her efforts to find the watering hole of the Black Clan was when she'd washed her stolen clothes in a nearby creek, rubbing away the dried blood and musty smell of sweat until her knuckles chafed raw. All her efforts culminated in this. Everything was risked for this. Risked on her ability to endear herself to the Black Clan. To ply one of its lowliest members with food and drink until she could befriend the poor bastard and move on to a bigger catch. One that could provide Mariko the direction she desperately needed to keep her family's honor intact and prove her worth beyond the marriage market. Prove her worth beyond that of a mere girl. Of course, this all hinged on the Black Clan never discovering she was in fact their intended target. It was all unfathomably frightening, darkly fascinating. Her parents would be horrified. Kenshin would undoubtedly disapprove. Mariko continued her careful scrutiny of the Black Clan. A group of 20 or so men of all ages surrounded Ranmaru, the boy she suspected to be their leader, despite his surprisingly young age. Everything about him indicated so, from his natural deportment to their natural deference. She squared her shoulders and coolly assessed those present, her attention fixed on the most pliable, its youngest and oldest members, the ones most likely in need of a listening ear. To Ranmaru's right stood a one-legged man of middle age, balancing his weight on a crude false limb. Alas, this man did not present a good target. He, too, seemed entirely too observant, his fingers drumming against any hard surface within grazing distance. At one hip were multiple small knives of varying size and shape. A pouch with dried leaves peeking from its folds rested at the opposing hip. A cook, if Mariko had to hazard a guess. Or the Black Clan's resident poisoner. Regardless, she would need a far more pliable target than he. All the cooks Mariko had met in her short life labored to notice even the most insignificant detail. Labored to understand the basic ingredient of all things. Another, smaller boy around her age was also not a good option. He moved erratically, hovering on the fringes, the tips of his otherwise immaculate topknot standing on end. His eyes had a dull stare to them, an almost haunted look, glazed over from a past Mariko was not ready or willing to hear. The straggler sleeping on the bench could be a decent choice, if she could successfully rouse him to drink, which at this rate did not seem likely. His chest rose and fell in a rhythm of total relaxation. Perhaps an anvil dropping from the sky might awaken him. Perhaps. Along the periphery, another young member of the Black Clan studied the leaves in the nearby trees with such serenity, Mariko was certain he'd stepped from a story she'd once heard her mother tell, one about a boy who floated through the sky, carried on the wind by an umbrella of oiled paper. His face was smooth and shiny, almost like a pebble shimmering beneath the surface of a stream. So intent was Mariko in her mission to learn everything she could possibly manage about everyone present that she did not see the elderly man looming over her until he was nearly stooped at eye level, the scent of burning charcoal emanating from his wrinkled skin. "Another?" the elderly man asked bluntly. It appeared his congeniality was reserved only for Ranmaru and his troop of murdering miscreants. "I..." Mariko paused to clear her throat, to deepen the note of her voice. "Yes." The man pursed his lips, forming radiating lines all around his mouth, much like a judgmental dumpling.
"Are you quite certain, young man?"
Immediately, Mariko assumed what she hoped was a distinctly masculine posture. She lengthened her spine, craned her neck to the right as though she were peering down her nose. For this one blessed moment, she was glad to be taller than most girls her age, glad to be not so delicate.
"I'm quite certain. Are you not in the business of selling wine?" "To those who like to drink it, yes."
A mischievous glint took hold of the old man's gaze. Mariko blinked.
"I like it just fine."
In her periphery, she noticed the boy with the haunted, almost murderous eyes draw closer, his expression tight. The old man rasped a laugh.
"You might have a lot of water in you, boy, but it doesn't make you a good teller of tales. The words don't form well on your lips. They don't take shape as they should. You should practice more."
Water? She'd always lacked the fluidity to be water. The natural grace. Her mother claimed she had too much earth in her, that she was far too grounded, far too stubborn, almost like a rock, half buried beneath the soil. If Mariko was anything outside of earth, she was wind, disruptive at times, and invisible always. Never a day in her life had she been water.
"You are mistaken," Mariko said gruffly. "Both about the water and about the drink. Akira-san is rarely mistaken about anything."
Mariko froze, refused to turn around, then thought better of it. Now is not the time for indecision of any kind. Death follows indecision like a twisted shadow. It was something her brother said. a word of caution too often levied her way. Though she could not immediately connect the voice to any in her memory of that night, Mariko knew it belonged to the leader of the Black Clan, to Ranmaru.
Far from its most pliable member, but if I can save myself the work of deceiving my way into his graces...
The same instant Mariko turned to face him, Ranmaru walked into her line of sight. Again, she sensed a leashed sort of power, like a coil about to spring.
"If Akira-san says you are water," he continued.
Mariko's right shoulder lifted, emulating one of Kenshin's many non-responses to her frequent questions. She held fast to her composure, though her pulse ratcheted in her throat.
"If it gets me another bottle of sake, I can be water."
His smile was pointed.
"Allow me."
He put his hand out to one side without even glancing to his left or right. The boy with the spiked topknot and the haunted gaze surrendered his bottle of spirits before Mariko had a chance to blink.
Why do they obey him so unflinchingly?
Ranmaru leaned close, and Mariko caught the faint scent of pine and steel. He poured a thin stream of rice wine into her cup with steady hands, hands that were remarkably clean. Hands that made Mariko want to conceal her own filthy fingers in the folds of her non-existent kimono. Just as this realization settled upon her, Mariko fought against it, fought against the urge to be the proper young woman she'd been raised to be. Hands trembling, she lifted the cup in a salute, then downed its contents in a single gulp. Of course, this would be the moment she coughed from the burn, a hacking, wretched sort of cough. The men at Ranmaru's back let loose a chorus of raucous laughter, save for the boy with the murderous eyes. Mariko shuddered to think what he might find amusing. A box of paralytic scorpions? A jar of venomous snakes?
"This little runt can't hold his drink,"
a burly man with arms of knotted pine and a kosode of burnished black leather announced through his laughter. Though tinged by amusement, the look he gave her bordered on dismissive, indifferent. Unease sparked once more within her. If the Black Clan thought her unworthy of their attention, Mariko would lose this precious opportunity to endear herself to their leader. The leader of the men charged with murdering her. But she could not readily pretend to be something she wasn't, and she wasn't a skilled drinker. Nor was she a skilled fighter. On the surface, she wasn't a fearsome enemy at all. Mariko was odd. Curious. Clever. Perhaps too clever, as her father always said. It had never been meant as a compliment, though she had always taken it as one. But perhaps it was better this way. These men would not want to see Mariko as odd or curious or clever. Those were characteristics that would warrant concern in any unknown. Maybe it would serve her well to don a different disguise. One of a bumbling fool desperately in need of direction, desperately in need of the Black Clan's most esteemed guidance, anything to keep them in her thrall. Mariko set down her cup, then cleared her throat with a series of raps against her chest, willing her nerves silent. She grinned up at Ranmaru sheepishly.
"I've recently left home to seek my fortune along the road, and I've not yet spent enough time in such places. Even still, I'm most grateful for the drink. Would you allow me to return the favor?"
Her grin widened.
"Then perhaps I can learn from you how better to enjoy such things."
Ranmaru watched Mariko as he refilled her cup, his gaze thoughtful, his broad lips pursed to one side.
"While I would normally..."
Just then, a series of booming footsteps crashed through the underbrush at the edge of the forest, disrupting the peaceful grove of maple trees across the way.
"Takeda Ranmaru!"
An enormous man, standing nearly 3 heads taller than anyone present, shouted into the night sky.
"I will not bear this insult a single day more!"
Ranmaru straightened. The men at his back stood silent, unmoving. A moment passed in stillness. A moment laced with tension. The sort meant to be bowed by a sword.
"Then by all means, state your grievances."
Ranmaru's smile was wide, unaffected.
"And we shall both face the consequences."
fall forward to keep moving. Takeda. Mariko knew that name. It sifted through her mind, dredging up a faded memory. One of a boy standing in a bloodied square, silently crying to the heavens.
Consequences?
Sporting a look of amused incredulity, the giant of a man stepped toward Ranmaru. The thunder in his voice dashed away Mariko's memories before they could fully take shape. In his meaty right hand, the giant held an immense kanabo. He swung the huge club into the light of a nearby torch.
Did you not think I would know it was you?
The metal barbs studding one end of the kanabo flashed dully.
Did you not think we would come to seek retribution?
He nodded to the men at his back, to their generous array of weaponry. These men were exactly what Mariko had pictured a passel of cutthroats to be. Bearded, unwashed, uncouth. The complete opposite of the Black Clan. In fact, Mariko would have staked the rest of her copper pieces, even an entire gold ryo, on the fact that the wretched soul she'd killed in the forest 5 days ago might have known these intruders. Might even have been well acquainted with them. Her discomfort rose in a sharp spike. She looked back to the Black Clan. Two sides of her continued their silent war. The part that wished to remain in the thick of things, and the part that wished to observe from a distance. Ranmaru stayed relaxed. His hands were at his sides, his posture easy. As though a giant bearing a studded club had not stepped into his world, intent on beating him to a bloody pulp.
Did you hear me, Ronin?
The giant spat the last word, hurling it into the air with the venom of a curse. Ronin! More scattered pieces aligned in Mariko's mind. A reason for Ranmaru's proper, almost noble comportment. Takeda Ranmaru was a masterless samurai, or the son of a samurai fallen from grace within the nobility. He was, or had been, part of Mariko's world once. Judging by his age, it could not have been so long ago. Again, that image of a boy not many years older than she, standing beside stones rusted brown with blood, came into brief focus. Then blurred away, like a reflection rippling across a pond. Mariko narrowed her eyes at the Ronin. The idea intrigued her with its ludicrousness. A noble thief. A mercenary of samurai lineage. Though Ranmaru continued to appear unaffected, she saw his right hand twitch, as if it was aching to take hold of a sword. I heard you. Ranmaru leaned back on his heels, once more the picture of calm, his words a mocking pronouncement. Both times, you bumbling colossus. The giant grunted. He swung his kanabo again. It cut through the air with a shrill whisper. An unmistakable threat. Mariko sank lower on her bench. This would not end well. She should leave. The last thing she wanted was to be collateral damage in a tavern brawl. But that cursed boy with the murder eyes continued to stare at her intently. It made it difficult for her to think straight. The group of men previously standing behind the giant began to unfurl into a line, standing shoulder to shoulder on either side of their leader. Each of their weapons was coated in layers of dried blood. They did not appear to be in a negotiating mood. Mariko caught the distinct sound of air being sucked through teeth, as though in anticipation of a thrill. When her gaze fell upon one of the cutthroats closest to her, she understood something she'd only heard of in passing. Bloodlust. A hunger nothing but slaughter could slake. Her heartbeat quickened. Ranmaru sighed. Mariko noted that though his men did not step forward in response to the giant's threat, many had placed hands on their own weapons, ready and willing to strike, ready and willing to defend their leader, the masterless samurai, the Ronin. Odd that a Ronin inspires such loyalty. A boy who would kill an innocent girl for money. She took in a measured breath, slowing the speed of her pulse. Her resolve hardened once more, hardened like folded steel, shaped and reshaped under a red-hot flame for countless days and nights, until nothing could best it. I will be a reed in the current, a reed of folded steel. Even if Ranmaru's men found him worthy of admiration, Mariko never would.
Chiyo, Nobutada.
This boy deserved to be hung upside down and drowned in Yedo Bay, disgraced for all the world to see. Just as the vision formed in her mind, the one-legged man previously standing to Ranmaru's right stepped between the boy and the bumbling colossus, placing his restless fingertips on the hilt of a dagger. Several more men moved to shield their leader from view, to take whatever blows may come his way with the honor a samurai would espouse for his lord. Try though she might, Mariko could not understand such reverence. Not amongst murderers and thieves. As the members of the Black Clan readied themselves for a fight, Mariko recalled something her tutor had said. He'd been a scholar from Kisun, well-versed in alchemy and metallurgy, a lover of ancient philosophy. One winter afternoon in their 10th year, Mariko had overheard their tutor say something to Kenshin that had taken root in her heart, that had left her in a state of quandary for most of the night. "Sometimes we must fall forward to keep moving." Mariko had not understood it at the time. Only recently had she begun to grasp its meaning. Remain motionless, remain unyielding, and you are as good as dead. Death follows indecision, like a twisted shadow. Fall forward, keep moving, even if you must pick yourself up first. That was what this young Ronin must have done. Fallen forward to keep moving. Into a life of savagery. A heated exchange of words tore Mariko from her thoughts. The men on both sides had drawn closer, bridged the gap even farther. The giant's men were being stirred into a slow-moving frenzy. A charge gathered in the clearing, like that feeling right before a summer storm. A flash of light crackling across the night sky. A flare of magic snapping through the air. When the giant took a threatening step toward Ranmaru, all the members of the Black Clan moved in tandem, all, Mariko noted, save the one still sleeping on the bench. Apparently, the anvil had yet to fall. "This is becoming tiresome," Ranmaru moved toward the men positioned protectively before him. They parted to let him pass. Several of them unsheathed their swords, their blades gleaming blue and orange in the light of the nearby torches. "If I remember correctly, I already sent word through one of your..." His nose twitched. "Men. As we were unaware that particular outpost had fallen under your domain, I offered to repay you the exact amount lost. You demanded more. Try though you might, that will never happen. Even you must know. The arm bends only inward." He spoke in an idle tone, though Mariko caught his dark eyes flashing.
"An insult," hissed a scrawny man with a face like a vulture. "You sully our name while stealing our livelihood, and you think a few copper pieces tossed in the dirt will be enough?"
"I did not sully your name."
"You did!"
Ranmaru frowned. "I most certainly did not." Interesting. Mariko could not help but think this fight too closely resembled a childish squabble, the like of which she'd had many a time with Kenshin, over such things as the last of the sweetened rice cakes.
"Since you won't give us what we are due, you forced us to resort to such measures," the hissing vulture continued. "Forced us to take you to the nearest daimyo and collect the reward money for your capture."
Again, Ranmaru sighed. It was almost exaggerated in length and breadth. "If you think the daimyo will gladly hand over 50 ryo and smile as you ride away in triumph, you are sorely mistaken."
"Enough of this ridiculous chatter," the giant bellowed. "Either come with us now, or force us to kill each of your men and take you prisoner anyway."
A mirthless smile cut across Ranmaru's face. "If you intend to take anything, then take my advice," he said. "This one time only, I'll offer it without cost. The best way to win a fight is to avoid it."
The words of a thieving coward.
Ranmaru grinned. Despite what you may think, I believe in honor amongst thieves. And I thought we were all...